Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
The gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
So, folks, after a brief foray into the world of seances and spiritualism with Shannon Taggart, Tim Swartz and I are back to UFOs again. Now, I was going to ask you, Tim, before we go introduce Michael Schratt, our guest this week. In terms of mediums and things like that, we have tried over 16 years of the Paracast to get someone to come on and quote-unquote demonstrate their alleged abilities, and we have not been very lucky. I mean, we had a couple of people on who claimed to have abilities, and they tried to analyze me and maybe a co-host or two, and I never saw anything compelling. Do you know of any mediums we can bring on?
Boy. You know, there's Tim Beckley's friend, Maria, who is pretty good. But, you know, she's more of a psychic rather than a medium who claims to, you know, talk to spirits. I don't know, you know, I mean, it's just to me, it's always iffy when you try to bring somebody who claims to, you know, speak to the spirit world and bring them on air and try to get them to perform on cue. It just, that's one of the things about the whole world of the paranormal is that it, and you know, I guess you see it also in the UFOs as well, is that nothing ever wants to perform on cue, which naturally is going to evoke suspicion. But yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I mean, I've seen a lot of people who claim to be, you know, number one, you know, masters at speaking to the spirits, but then when they're, you know, brought onto the table, they just never quite seem to perform as well as they say that they can.
Well, we keep the invitation open. If a medium wants to come on the Paracast and prove to us that what powers they claim to have are real, we're happy to give them a chance. Let's talk to Michael Schratt, who is not a medium, unless there's something about your past, Michael, you're not telling us. Okay. You specialize in exposing government fraud, waste, and abuse, it says here. And I want to ask you how you got involved in that and how you have time to do anything else, because just doing that would require about 2,000 people working 24 hours a day.
Interesting. Well, I am authorized to discuss my historical UFO cases, and so that's what I'm going to be doing today.
So you can't tell us about the other stuff?
In a way, I could, but I have to stick to my historical cases. That's going to be the best thing for me, yes. That's going to be the best approach for me today, yes.
Are there security issues involved?
Slightly, but if I stick to my historical cases, that's going to be the best thing for me.
Very well. Okay, yeah. How did you come to write this book and choose which cases to represent?
Sure, I can answer that. Well, living in Chicagoland area put me within range of QFOS. I'm sure you know where that was. So that was 2457 West Peterson Avenue in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And they had pretty much the largest private collection of UFO cases in the world at the time. And just being within range gave me the opportunity, with Mark Rodiger's approval, to literally go through all 60,000 cases. It took 3 years to do it. And this was what I call the real-world boots-on-the-ground research. This is not an internet search-type operation. This is a real thing where you have to go in, you set an appointment, you pull out the file drawers, and then you start going through manila folders by the thousands. And the criteria that I used was anything that had a sketch drawing illustration, a three-page report, and a flight path report, I would pull those files. And then from that point, I do a SolidWorks model of it, 3D rendering, do an AutoCAD, and then try to make the case come alive. And if it was a very sophisticated biological-looking craft, I'd commission the artwork. And so the goal was to maintain an important part of our national history by the use of full-color illustrations to make the cases come alive. And that's how I got it going on it.
It's interesting some of the sources that come in here. And I know early on you mentioned Otto Binder, and you mentioned him as a writer from Chicago. But I assume you know his full background, do you?
I know a part of his background. I can't say I know his full background.
Okay, well, he was a sci-fi writer.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And he wrote continuity for a number of comic books, like, for example, the early predecessor to the character Shazam, when it was known as Captain Marvel in the early days before that changed. And he wrote the text for the comic books, including one with a character called Scorpion that eventually was made into a movie in 1941 called The Adventures of Captain Marvel, the character being Scorpion. In 1959, he co-created something for DC Comics called the Legion of Superheroes and the character Supergirl, Otto Binder. But he was interested for many, many years, as you know, in UFOs. Let's go on here on these case selections and maybe tell us about a few of them.
Okay, so basically I kind of like to start out with just giving people an idea of where I got this information. I want them to be able to verify this on their own so that they can use the scientific principle and get the same results that I did. So just rip through these real quick. Source material was QFOS. We talked about that. NICAP, APRO, MUFON, which is now at Lunkin Airport in Cincinnati. Invisible Residence by Ivan T. Sanderson. Uninvited Guests, Richard Hall. David Marler UFO Research Collection. UFO Newspaper Clipping Service, Wendell Stevens Collection, Leonard Stringfield Collection, Gray Barker UFO Collection, that's Clarksburg, West Virginia, and then just good old-fashioned boots-on-the-ground research, going to university archives all around the country where people had papers and donations of boxes of material that had been sitting there for 40 years, where you had to make an appointment, pull the boxes, wear the white gloves, the whole thing. That's real-world research. And so that is the source material for some of the cases that we'll be going over. Now, I'll kick this off here. Date is February 3rd, 1983, and people can kind of just follow along in their mind's eye and use their imagination. It's almost as effective. So this lady's driving down the road. It's about 9 p.m. She's in Mobile, Alabama, on her way home. And she hears this large and loud boom, just a huge boom. Her car starts shaking. She pulls off to the side of the road. She looks under the vehicle. She thought the transmission fell out. That was okay. She got back into the driver's side, closed the door, started going about another half mile down the road. And off to the right, there was a clearing. And there was a lighted area, and within this lighted area was this massive 210-foot-long craft. It was 80 feet tall. It kind of looked like a circular orb up in the front part and then tapered back like a wedding cake as you go further aft in the back of the craft. Now, she said that the whole thing had these porthole windows on it, and she could look through these porthole windows all the way through the craft to the other side where there were other porthole windows on the other side. And she said what it reminded her of was kind of a shipping manufacturing yard somewhere on the East Coast where they were laying the keel and then they were putting in the bulkheads. That's exactly what the interior of this craft looked like. And then she said that the outer part of the skin of the craft had literally thousands of rivets on it. Like the same rivets you'd see on the Golden Gate Bridge, that's what this thing looked like. Now, on the very top, there was a transparent section that had kind of a one-third wraparound area, and then beneath whatever these might be glass pane windows were these 5'10" humanoid-looking beings. They were wearing a one-piece tight-fitting flight suit. They looked like they were moving around in this antiseptically sterile environment. Now, just under that portion, there was another clear transparent section. And then they had a whole series of these large transparent porthole windows. Below those, there's what she called a sandbox, a 6-foot by 6-foot sandbox. And then protruding out of the sandbox were these about 3-foot diameter pipes that were 4 feet in length.
We have Michael Schratt, author of Dark Files, A Pictorial History of Lost, Forgotten, and Obscure UFO Encounters, Book 1. Our guest co-host is Tim Swartz. You're in
the Paracast.
Hey, listeners. I want you to have the entire Paracast experience. So I'd like to tell you about After the Paracast. After the Paracast is an exclusive feature for subscribers to the Paracast Plus. With After the Paracast, you never know what's going to happen next. After the Paracast features color commentary, special interviews, and further conversations with Paracast guests. With Paracast Plus, you can download a very special enhanced version of the Paracast also. We do offer exclusive music, videos, and more features are coming. To get more info about subscribing, please visit theparacast.plus. Once again, theparacast.plus. Prices are just $1.50 a week, less than a cup of coffee at your local convenience store. Check out theparacast.plus to learn more about Paracast Plus.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
This is how we do every day.
If you love them enough to turn off your music and pretend like their music is your music.
Ah, this is Mommy's jam.
Then surely you'll check nhtsa.gov/the right seat to make sure they're in the right car seat.
Let's play it again.
Check today at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ag Council.
Hey folks, Tom D for ParanormalDate.com. Are you looking for love in all the wrong places? Now you have a chance to change that by signing up free at ParanormalDate.com. This incredible dating site puts people of like minds together. People who are interested in the strange, the unusual, ghosts, zombies, UFOs, crop circles, and more. ParanormalDate.com was developed for you, people who seek a little more than the other dating services offer. You can join for free by going to ParanormalDate.com, and if you decide you like it and you want to connect with others, use the code George for a substantial discount. So many people want to share their experiences with the paranormal, the afterlife, the unusual, and this is the place to meet and share common interests with those of like minds. So sign up for free at ParanormalDate.com. That's ParanormalDate.com. Use the code word George and start meeting others. Get going now and connect with someone you like.
7 million children suffer from asthma, more than any other chronic disease. Most asthma attacks are caused by allergic reactions to allergens, including those left behind by cockroaches and mice. In fact, 82% of U.S. households contain mouse allergens, and cockroaches are found in up to 98% of urban homes. How can you protect your family? Find out at PestWorld.org. A message from the National Pest Management Association and the American College of Allergy, Asthma, and Immunology.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
We return to Michael Schratt. He's talking about a really fascinating encounter that involved strange occupants. This is from 1983. Let's go on.
Okay, so just below these cylindrical devices, there was a door closing from right to left. And on the far left-hand portion of this opening, where this door was closing, she said that there was a wall that had tubes, pipes, and cylinders on it, similar to what we hear about on the January 5th, 2000 Southern Illinois Triangle case, where on the bottom understructure of the craft, there were tubes, pipes, and cylinders on that too. So that's one thing to keep in mind when you look at some of these cases. The detail that the witnesses are describing matches up on a lot of these craft, but they're at different locations with different witnesses. Now, below all of this, there were two transparent gondolas with the same 5'10" looking humanoid beings with the one-piece flight suit. And then on the top part of these transparent gondolas, there were literally hundreds of 12-inch by 12-inch highly polished mirror reflective devices that were in the form of a cross. And that's pretty much what this particular craft looked like. Now, there were beaming spotlights that were shining above the craft itself, and then the whole thing moved off to the west and then disappeared behind some trees. Again, this is February 3rd, 1983, Mobile, Alabama. The reference for this, just so people know, is the April Bulletin, Volume 32, Number 2, 1984, so people can read this entire report for themselves.
Now, one more thing to mention. APRO, the Aerial Phenomena Research Organization, which was run by the late Coral and Jim Lorenzen, had a lot of occupant cases. That was really what they specialized in. And they had a lot of really interesting research over the years. The sad story, of course, is that their stuff now is being held in file cabinets by someone who won't let other researchers get them. I know, for example, one of your sources, David Marler, who was on the PowerCast 2 weeks ago, has been among the people trying to get a hold of those records. Okay, this is obviously a pretty fascinating case, and I know you've got a bunch of others you want to emphasize. But when you refer to them as lost or forgotten, is that because they weren't followed up, or because there wasn't a lot of publicity?
When you go through the file cabinets at QFOS, the manila folders were packed so tightly that you could not put a razor blade between each manila folder. And when I pulled out these cases, like from 1972, I know for a fact that had never even seen the light of day. It was never published. It was not in IUR. They never published it at QFOS, which means it's never been seen. So that's what I mean by lost and forgotten.
When you were at QFOS, going through these files, was there anybody else there? I mean, you know, the impression that I get is that you've been one of the only people to actually go through these files.
It's very interesting you mention that, because out of the years that I went through there, there was not one other person that took advantage of the collection, not one. Now, they had people that were associated with QFOS there, like Mark was there. He had to be there because he had to open up the office. And sometimes there was one other person there, but they were internal to QFOS. They weren't like total investigators. They were within QFOS. So not one other person took advantage of the library. And to this day, I don't know why. It was like an unused opportunity. There was nobody else there. And it's a mystery. It's a mystery to this day.
How difficult would it have been for somebody to, you know, contact the organization and say, hey, I'd like to do some research on your files?
It was no problem at all. I would just email Mark a day before, and when I got the okay from him, I just met him the next day. So it was anybody could have done it. Anybody could have done it. But I don't know. I mean, it took a lot of work to do it. I mean, you literally had to go through all these files, so you had to have a passion for this. This can't be for the faint of heart. You have to be, like, obsessed with this. This has to be a crusade in order to get to that level of this. So maybe that's what deterred other people. They definitely had things in there that I know for a fact had never been seen. It was never followed up. It was never published. And so I thought, wow, we've got all these old dead cases. Let's make these things come alive. Let's get them out of the 50s and 60s. Let's make brand new illustrations, full color. Let's commission the artwork and make them come alive. That was the whole point of it all.
Now, point of order, the case in Socorro, New Mexico, from April 24th, 1964, has received quite a bit of publicity.
It has. Absolutely.
Sure, and also there was a recent book from Kevin D. Randall where he goes back to all of the evidence and reevaluates everything. So I can't consider that lost or obscure.
Well, not that one, but there are others that are, though. So, yeah.
Sure.
There are some more famous cases there, that's true, but there's a lot that aren't.
Yeah, I wanted to just look at a couple of things also that caught my attention as I'm looking over the contents of the book and reading through it. And that is, you go back as far as 1796. And for those who think the UFO mystery began with Kenneth Arnold in 1947, it's fascinating to know that there are other cases to be explored. Is this something you found buried in one of those file folders?
Where we kind of open this up is Otto Binder published Our Space Age from 1965 to 1969, where it was almost completely UFO cases that were sent in. So there were some reference works that dated back way early. Those cases, a lot of those come from the Otto Binder collection that was basically in the Gray Barker collection in Clarksburg, West Virginia. That's where I got that information.
Okay, tell us more about this particular case, because I want to see how the description lines up with current cases.
Okay, so do you want to move on to the next case in the list?
I'd like to go to this one, the one in 1796.
Okay, let me go over here. Let's see here. Okay, so just again, this is an Otto Binder case, and just to set the background here, when he published these in the 60s, people that read them, they sent in cases from all around the world, and they were multiple time frames, multiple locations. It certainly predates Kenneth Arnold's sighting. And one of these, and there were references for these, and I'm just going to read this word for word. October 12, 1796, on Columbus Day over 170 years ago, Canadian observers reported an astonishing fleet of airships, UFOs, with portholes and visible occupants sailing over the Bay of Fundy from the Pacific Stars and Stripes, courtesy K. Larson. So that's the source for it. So this predates practically everything we know about ufology. Way before Kenneth Arnold, way before December 17th, 1903 at Kitty Hawk with the Wright brothers, we're talking pre-flight here. So someone or something is flying these in 1796.
This is what really is fascinating, these old cases, to see how they relate to current ones. Obviously, the problem with it is, we all realize, being it's so old, what can you do other than report the anecdotal report? It's just
that's
not correct. Something you can follow up on. And this is true about a lot of the cases that you have there, but it's nonetheless fascinating. And I want, maybe we can go to one more before we get into more current cases, and we're going to do a break here. So we've got Michael Schratt. We're looking at a book of his called Dark Files. Okay, it's a dark book with white type on a black background also. With Gene and Tim, you're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
What if you could cut your heating bills this winter with your existing wood-burning fireplace and not spend thousands doing it? You can with Great Wall of Fire Fireplace Grates. Our U.S.-patented, made-in-America Wall of Fire Grates increase fireplace efficiency, eliminate fireplace smoke problems, and come with a 30-day money-back guarantee. See our grates in action and get free shipping from walloffire.com or call 800-274-7364. Fireplace heat without fireplace smoke. Walloffire.com.
Frustrated trying to get business capital? Want to take the slow process and rejection out of the equation? GCNLoans.com removes the slow, irritating approval process. Instead, get quick, simple funding. Powered by David Allen Capital, 80% of our pre-qualified clients are approved in days. Pre-qualify at GCNLoans.com and get your money this week. It's that easy. GCNLoans.com. That's GCNLoans.com.
USA Radio News with Kenneth Burns.
German Chancellor Olaf Scholz and French President Emmanuel Macron was on the phone with their Russian counterpart Vladimir Putin for more than an hour, pushing for an immediate ceasefire. But a French official says Putin did not show a willingness to end the war. Scholz and Macron echoed a statement from Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, who said negotiations must begin with a suspension of hostilities. Zelensky, during a briefing, said negotiating teams had now started discussing concrete topics as opposed to trading ultimatums. He said about 1,300 Ukrainian troops had been killed since Russia invaded his country. He also said the conflict meant some small Ukrainian towns no longer exist. The Texas Supreme Court stopped the last challenge to the state's law that practically banned abortions in the Lone Star State. The Dow finished its fifth straight week with losses, losing more than 200 points Friday. This is USA Radio News. An Ohio police officer has been cleared of criminal wrongdoing in the shooting of a teenager. 16-year-old Makia Bryant was shot and killed by Columbus police officer Nicholas Reardon as she swung a knife at a young woman. Police were responding to a call to Bryant's foster home about a group of girls threatening to stab other housemates. The killing has led to a Justice Department review of the Columbus Police Department. Children trying to enter the United States will no longer be denied a chance to seek asylum. The change from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention was announced late Friday. It said that expulsion of unaccompanied non-citizen children is not warranted to protect public health. The change comes ahead of a court order that would have allowed the Biden administration to expel unaccompanied children seeking asylum under Title 42, which was introduced in March of 2020 in the early days of the pandemic. Singer Tracy Braxton has died. The 50-year-old had been fighting esophageal cancer. You're listening to USA Radio News.
Stop aging now. Restore those joints. Boost your strength. Because it's official. NutriMedical has released the most exciting, powerful anti-aging supplement on the market. Dr. Bill Deagle's Red Deer Velvet DR has been approved by the U.S. Patent Office. Imagine stem cell rejuvenation all in one capsule without huge expense. Dr. Bill MD discovered that as an unborn baby grows in the mother's womb, he or she does not deteriorate or physically age. Red Deer Velvet DR, like the uterus, provides 300 biomolecules and 6 hormones protected in one special DR capsule that delivers lipid packages directly into your circulation. This patented technology bypasses the stomach and is released into the small bowel unaltered by digestive enzymes and stomach acid. Remember, Red Deer Velvet DR. Improve endurance, simulate your immune system, increase learning ability, and even improve sexual libido with Red Deer Velvet DR. Click NutriMedical.com. That's NutriMedical.com. Or call toll-free 888-212-8871 and get on the road to a newer, rejuvenated, happier you.
Hi, it's Grant Cameron from PresidentialUFO.com. You're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
Michael, as you see, Tim is the man of 27 and a half voices.
Okay.
And he will give you some over the period.
Sure,
now,
that's fine.
Now, I wanted to get into a couple of other older cases.
Sure.
Before we get into more modern stuff, do you have something you'd like to talk about first?
Yeah, sure. We can go on to the next Otto Binder case here. Now, this is July 1868. Villagers in Campagio, Chile, were frightened by a giant armor-plated machine covered with steel scales whose twin searchlight eyes stabbed down brilliantly. Well, that's interesting because if you talk about the 1897 mystery airship wave, they had very similar strange wing-shaped craft with these beaming spotlights come down. So there's a historical precedence for that that even predates the 1897 mystery airship wave.
Now, I'm looking at the picture that is made here. Is this something that you had drawn based on the description?
Well, I had the original case from the Otto Binder report within the Gray Barker collection, and then I commissioned my friend Tom Bogan to use that as a guide and then create a full color rendering, and that's what you see.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you look at this picture here,
yep,
we're seeing here something that looks modern and is not probably in some respects dissimilar from the Kenneth Arnold sighting, the way it's the wings are shaped.
It kind of looks like that, yeah. Mm-hmm. It does.
That is fascinating because you'd think looking at this that you're watching something in a sci-fi movie. Not something that people saw and reported in the 19th century.
Yeah, I know. But what's interesting, though, is there are literally thousands of newspaper clippings that really lock in the 1897 mystery airship wave. I mean, and we can go over it later if you want, but literally thousands of eyewitnesses describing these beaming spotlights, in some cases anchors were lowered from these things. They had these big black dogs on the deck of the craft They had the quote-unquote pilots were very well-dressed, eccentric inventor types wearing a black suit and a black top hat. In some cases, letters inside envelopes were dropped from these craft to be picked up by people below. That all happened. That's all been documented. When you look at that, and then you've got the 1868 here, I'm just thinking, could we be looking at a very early man-made technology here? And that, it certainly appears to be the case when you further go into 1897 Mystery Airship Wave.
Now, you mentioned one person we also know here on the PowerCast, Walter Bosley,
yep.
Who's made a point of the fact that this is something that's an Earth-made development. And the interesting fact about it is that the airships in general weren't that much ahead of the dirigibles and other aircraft that we developed later on. So it could have been, I suppose, something that was a prototype. On the other hand, we should also bear in mind that some of the newspapers of that era were not averse to making up stories to sell papers.
That's true, too. The other thing to keep in mind is the reference works by Charles Delshaw talked about how one of the engineers figured out how to create something called NV gas, and they said, quote, they figured out how to negate gravity. This is back in 1897, so they were already working on that, so it could have been somewhere in maybe the, I could say, early 1880s, maybe early 1890s, before they really started going. So someone figured out something. Now, that's via Charles Delshaw. If they were able to do that, difficult to say, but some of these were going against the wind at, like, 80 miles an hour, so they must have figured out something, but the secret to the NB gas died with the engineer.
Yeah, there were cases all across the country.
That's correct.
From that period. Here in Indiana, I mean, there were newspaper reports from Terre Haute and Fort Wayne and I think some other cities. You know, it seems like the wave started in the west and then traveled to the east and south.
That's exactly correct.
So, yeah, the idea, I think, of a, as it's been referred to, a breakaway civilization that, you know, you have a group of engineers who may have discovered some a new form of technology as far back as the middle 19th century. There seems to be some kind of indications that this is a possibility because, as Gene pointed out, it always seems like that the technology on these UAPs just seem to be just a little bit ahead of our own. So, yeah, I mean, it's something that, rather than being, you know, technology from, say, another country, you know, a foreign adversary,
right.
That we're dealing with, you know, a technology that's earthbound but not associated with any known government.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, I wanted to ask you about the case that's kind of next in your book here.
Okay.
July 30th, 1909.
Okay.
Where it's like a flying boat.
Yes, yes. I know the one you're talking about. Right. Here we have, I don't know about the pronunciation here, Wakaka Valley, New Zealand. Men aboard a dredge reported a boat-shaped UFO that circled all around with two human-like figures visible inside. Credit Tony Brunt. So 1909, just after the Wright brothers, we've got a triangular-shaped craft with a, you could call it a transparent crew compartment in the front. Back in 1909, no visible means of propulsion. Doesn't look like there's any flight controls, no wings, no tail fins. Someone's building this, 1909. Linda Zimmerman, when she gives her lectures, she talks about a similar time frame, a similar type craft.
Well, what's interesting to me is that a lot of these early cases describing not gray aliens, but
yes,
substantially human-like,
exactly,
beings, which is, yeah, interesting because you think, well, is this part of cultural phenomenon, or are they in some cases inventions,
mm-hmm,
from people here on Earth, but then maybe the description we're hearing doesn't reflect that reality because of the inconsistencies. And of course, we're asking people here in 1909, people who are seafaring men, as they say, trying to interpret what is a scientific phenomenon.
Exactly. That's exactly correct. I think they describe it the best way they could. Now, the interpretation of what that means in a drawing, there's going to be some discrepancy there, but at least we have something, and I felt it's important to salvage all these and bring them to light. It's just, I felt it was really good information, and there are hundreds of these type cases within the AutoBinder collection. I'm talking like 300 of these, and you can spend an entire weekend just reading through all these. And yes, I admit there probably is hoaxes in here. Probably, you know, you have 300, 400, you're going to have some far out cases that don't make any sense that are probably hoaxes that people just sent in. But as a whole, if you look at this objectively as a whole, I don't think you can discount all these cases.
What is interesting to me is the fact that in the UFO field, we tend, not me necessarily, but we tend to focus on the cultural legends or myths like Roswell, for example. Rendlesham, for example, although you do mention Cash Landrum, which is not talked about quite as often. But we're so heavily focused on a few cases that may have problems in and of themselves that we don't get to all this wealth of information. The fact that over the years, there are so many thousands of reports, as you say, buried in these archives. And part of the problem also, I think you'd agree with me, Michael, is that none of these organizations had large staffs with which to...
You got that right.
With which to...
They did not have large staff. You're right about that.
You know, we're talking about the Lorenzans and a few researchers who volunteered. NICAP was never very large, and NICAP, I think, was more emphasizing Major Kehoe's desire to lobby the government to investigating UFOs as opposed to actually investigating anything, which is unfortunate, although Richard Hall, of course, did some interesting work. We have Michael Schratt talk about his book covering cases that aren't getting legendary or myth-making status in Dark Files. With Gene and Tim, you're in
the Paracast.
Listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on the special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there is The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at rockoids.com. That's rockoids, rockoids.com.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions, silverlungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs Generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs Generator and Lung Delivery System at silverlungs.com. That's silverlungs.com.
Are you afraid to go to the mailbox because of letter after letter from the IRS? Are they stacking on more and more penalties and interest? By now, you know the problem won't go away on its own. Don't let the IRS chase you to your grave with penalties and interest and liens and levies. You need real help now. I'm Dan Pilla. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I help thousands of people solve tax problems they thought couldn't be solved. I can help you too. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com. Danpilla.com.
Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Pouty Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. The first word is shop, spelled S-H-O-P, then the word super, and then the word tea. The complete website is shopsupertea.com or call us at 818-984-6100 Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-984-6100. Shopsupertea.com.
I spend a lot of time in the garage, but even more time in the rain, sleet, and mud. In 95, I helped tow your moving trailer. In 05, I helped you get out of a ditch. Yeah, I know I'm a bit rusty, and sadly in 09, it was sparks from me, your handy chains, dragging behind your truck that accidentally started a wildfire.
Sparks from dragging chains can start a wildfire. Spark a change, not a wildfire. Visit SmokeyBear.com, brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
This is Tracy Torme, screenwriter-producer. You're listening to Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
Okay, he just came from Brooklyn, Tim Swartz. A man from Indiana pretends he's from Brooklyn. Michael Schrat joining us. The cover is fascinating here. The one that we see where you see the full moon in the background.
Mm-hmm.
And you see right. This large craft with numerous portals. Is that correct. Representing a specific sighting?
Well, that's the one we just covered at the very beginning. Yep. So are you looking at the PDF or are you looking at the link to the book on Amazon?
I'm looking at the PDF.
You're looking at the PDF. Okay, because that's obsolete now. This thing has gone full-blown publication on Amazon as a soft cover. I've already obsoleted that version, and I've got the brand new version that's just been published, and it's got another 25 cases within it. There's 61 cases total, and it's up there now. So I completely redid the whole thing.
Aha.
You're looking at an obsolete version, technically. So anyway, that's fine. Still got good information there.
Well, that is the book that was sent to us. In any case, what particular cases, any important cases that I will not see from my copy here that you put in the book?
Well, I think what we could do is, if you want to go through some of the more prevalent ones, they're still a little bit vague, but they're in both versions. You want to cover USS FDR?
Sure, go for it.
Yeah, that's a good case. Yeah.
All right, so background here. Chester Grusinski was the primary witness. He's no longer with us. He died about 2 years ago. So it's late 1958, Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. This has to do with this USS FDR aircraft carrier. And the FDR was the first aircraft carrier to carry nuclear weapons on board. It had this historical legacy of USO and UFO encounters. And that might be the reason why, with these nuclear weapons on board. So according to Chester Grusinski, who was there the day this happened, it's about 9 p.m. at night. There's commotion below decks. People are swearing. There's chaos. Men are screaming. They're running. They're trying to climb ladders to get up to the flight deck. And when they got there, they saw this orange yellowish light approaching the aircraft carrier. And then it parked itself about 200 feet above the flight deck of the aircraft carrier with 25 naval personnel looking at this thing. It's hovering above the flight deck. And what it is, it's this 200-foot-long cigar-shaped craft that has these rectangular windows, in back of the windows, they said that they could see what looked like humanoid beings walking back and forth. Now, I have the original MUFON report here with his sketch. There's an enlargement that shows you what happened next. One of these beings kind of pressed his face against the glass and was looking at the naval personnel below. He lifted his hand above his head like he was waving to the men below. And what's interesting is Chester Grzynski, I actually called this guy on the phone. I spoke to him. And he said that they could feel the heat radiating off this craft onto their faces. So that qualifies this as a CE2 and a CE3. And then from that point, we took all the information from the newspaper clippings, because there's at least two newspaper articles about this that he's published in. There's two what's called flat-top newsletters that's specifically about aircraft carriers. So there's two of those. That's four right there. Plus his five-page report and the report from MUFON. So there's essentially five sources for this. Put all that information together. And what you see on the cover of that PDF is the rendering that Tom Bogan did for me, where you can see this craft hovering over the flight deck with the personnel looking at it. So this is late 1958, having to do with the USS FDR.
Now, I would want to mention here, which people might want to know because they check on Amazon, they look at the reviews.
Sure.
You have 4.5 out of 5.
Okay.
Most reviews are 5 stars. Okay. And there's a single 1-star review, which is not a review.
Yeah.
It says, where's the book? They want to know when the book will be available as a real book. He's uninterested in Kindle. That's the review. He never actually got the book. And I wonder why that's even included.
That was before I published the softcover version. If that guy would go back and read his comment, he'll see that the electronic version has been discontinued and completely updated with the new version.
Then you can't review something you haven't read.
Well, no, that's true. That's true. That's true.
Yeah, I see a lot of reviews like that where it's pretty obvious to me that they didn't even read the book. I won't name which books I'm referring to.
Well, you've had plenty of books on there yourself, Tim.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there are people who review the Paracast on Apple.
Okay.
And they say that we are obsessed with left-wing politics. Now, as regular listeners know, we've done over 800 episodes of the Paracast, over 16 years, plus several hundred of the After the Paracast premium podcast, and we don't talk about politics very much. And when we do, it's because of the fact that we've got government investigations of UFOs, and once you talk about the government, you enter the realm of politics.
Yeah, I see. Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty wacky. Welcome to the world of book writing, my friend. Let's go for another case. Let's go for...
Sure.
I just wanted to hit me here, and you can look it up. Tic-Tac UAP encounter over Wycombe, Pennsylvania, March 67. The reason I mention that is because the current UFO investigation from the Pentagon is about Tic-Tac UFOs from 2004.
That's right. Yeah, that's a good point. Well, as you know, now that they've tried to rebrand UFOs as UAP, they're trying to make anything prior to 2004 disappear. But we've already covered at least 6 cases now that predate all of that. So they can't make these historical cases disappear. They stand alone. They have paperwork to back it up. They have references. They have witnesses. And these cases, they won't go away. They won't die. They won't disappear. They're a part of the historical legacy.
Well, that's important, too. There are tens of thousands of these cases.
There are tens of thousands of them. That's right. All around the world. And a lot of these have similar type structure. A lot of times you hear this low-frequency electrical humming noise associated with these craft. And then in many cases, they have prongs or protrusions sticking out of them, and there's this high-pitched drilling noise before they depart. That's something that happens multiple cases as well.
Now, looking over the cases for this book,
yeah,
were there many you discarded because they were too sketchy or maybe could have been frauds?
Yeah. There was one case in particular that, to me, it's out there. Now, I've talked about it a couple times in lectures and presentations, but I'm hesitant to do it because it's just so outlandish. So, yeah, it's kind of unusual to get into some of it, but the weird thing about it is it was referenced and there were like, there was a 10-page report, and there was a flight path report, and it was published in newspaper articles. So, it's kind of a 50-50 shot on that one.
Well, you know, it's worth mentioning anyway, because we like to cover everything in the field from a viewpoint of journalism. So if this is a case that people should suspect because it's not holding up, tell us what it is.
You want me to tell you what it is? Okay. No, that's fine. That's fine. We can certainly do that.
Yeah, sometimes the most outlandish cases seem to have the most legs.
I don't know. I don't think it's that well known. It's talked about a little bit, but it really didn't get too much coverage in ufology. I think people thought that the credibility level was just not there. But I still think it's an interesting case. We can cover it if you want to.
Sure, go ahead. We're going to have to do our break in about a minute, but why don't you start the description, and we'll pick up on the other side.
Okay. So essentially this has to do with two men who were driving down the road, and what happened next is a 6-foot diameter dish-shaped craft basically parked itself right in front of their vehicle and was like lockstep with the vehicle as the car's going 50 miles down the road, 50 miles an hour down the road. And they, whatever this craft was, had a bubble transparent canopy up front. And there were two small beings that were about 3.5 feet tall. They had very aged grooved faces that looked like hamburger meat. That's the best way to describe it. Very strange. And they were wearing a one-piece tight-fitting blue flight suit. They had a backpack onto their backs. And one of these beings, after this bubble transparent canopy tipped up, he flew out of the craft itself. He opened up the car door, okay, and the passenger and the driver moved off to the right while this being got behind the wheel and started driving the car another half mile down the road. I mean, already it's a crazy case. It didn't say in the report how he reached the pedals of the vehicle, like the gas and the brake. It didn't mention anything about that. Now,
let's continue this case of ET stealing cars. On the other side with Michael, Gene, and Tim, you're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Hey, listeners. I want you to have the entire Paracast experience. So I'd like to tell you about After the Paracast. After the Paracast is an exclusive feature for subscribers to the Paracast Plus. With After the Paracast, you never know what's going to happen next. After the Paracast features color commentary, special interviews, and further conversations with Paracast guests. With Paracast Plus, you can download a very special enhanced version of the Paracast also. We do offer exclusive music, videos, and more features are coming. To get more info about subscribing, please visit theparacast.plus. Once again, theparacast.plus. Prices are just $1.50 a week, less than a cup of coffee at your local convenience store. Check out theparacast.plus to learn more about Paracast Plus.
Now with orders to stay at home, public health concerns, the reality of illness due to pathogens and viruses, your health is at an all-time high risk. That's why it's critical to take a proactive approach to boost your immune system. You can with new nano colloidal silver from Americare. Our patented process with tiny silver particles, 1/100th the size of a red blood cell, allows for maximum body absorption. Americare's nano colloidal silver effectively disinfects your body internally, attacking pathogens and viruses while supercharging your immune system. Colloidal silver is antibacterial and antiviral. Simply put, it prohibits bacterial respiration, suffocating viral cells, preventing the virus from replicating. And now, due to public health concern, Americare is authorized to offer our lowest and best price ever, around $1 a day, but supplies are limited. Purchase nano colloidal silver now at immunesupportnow.com. That's immunesupportnow.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Supplies are limited.